A blue sign hurtles through space toward a green planet. Turner. Now, an RKO radio picture. This film is described for blind and visually impaired audiences by Descriptive Video Service, a division of the Media Access Group at WGBH. Described by Carol Hostetler. Read by Peter Haydu. Funded by the U.S. Department of Education. Words appear. A Mercury production by Orson Welles. The Magnificent Ambersons, from the novel by Booth Tarkington.
The magnificence of the Ambersons began in 1873. Their splendor lasted throughout all the years that saw their Midland town spread and darken into a city. In that town, in those days, all the women who wore silk or velvet knew all the other women who wore silk or velvet, and everybody knew everybody else's family horse and carriage. The only public conveyance was the streetcar. A lady could whistle to it from an upstairs window, and the car would halt at once and wait for her, while she shut the window, put on her hat and coat, went downstairs, found an umbrella, told the girl what to have for dinner, and came forth from the house. Too slow for us nowadays, because the faster we're carried, the less time we have to spare. During the earlier years of this period, while bangs and bustles were having their way with women, there were seen men of all ages to whom a hat meant only that rigid, tall, silk thing known to impudence as a stovepipe. But the long contagion of the Derby had arrived. One season the crown of this hat would be a bucket, next it would be a spoon. Every house still kept its boot jack, but high-top boots gave way to shoes and Congress gaiters, and these were played through fashions that shaped them now with toes like box ends and now with toes like the prows of racing shells. Trousers with a crease were considered plebeian. The crease proved that the garment had lain upon a shelf and hence was ready-made. With evening dress, a gentleman wore a tan overcoat, so short that his black coattails hung visible 5 inches below the overcoat. But after a season or two, he lengthened his overcoat till it touched his heels. And he passed out of his tight trousers into trousers like great bags. In those days, they had time for everything. Time for sleigh rides, and balls, and assemblies, and cotillions, and open house on New Year's, and all-day picnics in the woods, and even that prettiest of all vanished customs, the serenade. Of a summer night, young men would bring an orchestra under a pretty girl's window, and flute, harp, fiddle, cello, cornet, and bass viol would presently release their melodies to the dulcet stars.
A young man trips and falls onto his string bass. At the window, a woman frowns.
Against so homespun a background, the magnificence of the Ambersons was as conspicuous as a brass band at a funeral.
A crowd.
The Amberson Mansion.
The pride of the town.
Well, well.
$60,000 for the woodwork alone.
Hot and cold running water?
Upstairs and down.
And stationary washstands in every last bedroom in the place.
At the Amberson's front door, the young bassist holds a wrapped gift. A black butler opens the door.
Is Miss Amberson at home?
No, sir, Mr. Morgan. Miss Amberson's not home.
Well, thanks, Sam.
Later, Mr. Morgan returns with a large bouquet of flowers and waits with an eager smile. The Amberson's butler opens the front door.
No, sir. Miss Amberson ain't home to you, Mr. Morgan.
Thanks.
The crowd watches him leave.
I guess she's still mad at him.
Who?
Isabel.
Major Amberson's daughter.
Eugene Morgan's her best boo. Took a bit too much to drink the other night right out here. And stepped clean through the bass fiddle serenade.
Well, I haven't seen her since she got back from abroad.
Isabel? Well, sir, I don't know as I know just how to put it, but she's kind of a delightful-looking young lady.
In town, Isabel leaves a shop with a dark-haired man. Holding a dog's leash, she smiles down at her St. Bernard, then notices Eugene and frowns. He brings his steam-powered carriage to a fitful stop, then jumps out with his bouquet. Isabel turns on her heel.
Wilbur? Wilbur Minifer? I never thought he'd get her.
Well, what do you know?
Well, Wilbur may not be any Apollo, as it were, but he's a steady young businessman.
Wilbur Minifer. Looks like Isabel's pretty sensible for such a showy girl.
To think of her taking him.
Yes, just because of Anne, any woman would like 1,000 times better with a little wild one night at a serenade.
What she minds was his making a clown of himself in her own front yard. Made her think he didn't care much about her. She's probably mistaken, but it's too late for her to think anything else now. The wedding will be a big Amberson-style thing. Raw oysters floating in scooped-out blocks of ice. And a band from out of town. And then Wilbur will take Isabel on the carefulest little wedding trip he can manage. And she'll be a good wife to him. But they'll have the worst spoiled lot of children this town will ever see.
How on earth do you figure that out, Mrs. Foster?
She couldn't love Wilbur, could she? Well, it'll all go to her children. And she'll ruin them.
The prophetess proved to be mistaken in a single detail merely. Wilbur and Isabel did not have children. They had only one.
Only one? But I'd like to know if he isn't spoiled enough for a whole carload.
Again, she found none to challenge her. George Amberson Minifer, the major's one grandchild, was a princely terror.
Hey. In a pony cart, George skims by a man.
Golly, I guess you think you own this town.
There were people, grown people they were, who expressed themselves longingly. They did hope to live to see the day, they said, when that boy would get his comeuppance.
His what?
His comeuppance. Something's bound to take him down someday. I only want to be there.
George passes a freckled boy.
Look at the girly curlies. Say, Bob, where'd you steal your mother's old sash?
Your sister stole it for me. She stole it off our old clothesline and gave it to me.
You go get your hair cut. Jan, I haven't got any sister.
Yeah, I know you haven't at home. I mean the one that's in jail.
I dare you to get out of that pony cart.
George jumps down.
I dare you outside that gate.
You're halfway here, I dare you.
Here he comes.
George's blonde ringlets bounce as he leaps onto the neighbor boy. An older man frowns down from a window. As they wrestle, the man rushes out his front door.
Hey, boy!
He drags George off the other child.
Boy!
George punches the man.
Enough of that! Go!
You stop that, you!
Ow!
I guess you don't know who I am!
Yes, I do, and you're a disgrace to your mother!
You shut up about my mother!
Ow! She ought to be ashamed, little bad little boy like you!
George slugs him.
Billy Goat, you! Pull on your vest and wipe off your chin and go to...
What?
Later.
This was heard not only by myself, but by my wife and the lady who lives next door.
He's an old liar.
Georgie, you mustn't say liar.
Dear, did you say what he says you did?
Well, Grandpa wouldn't wipe his shoe on that old straw,
Georgie. Georgie, you mustn't.
I mean, none of us Ambersons wouldn't have anything to do with him.
That's not what we're talking about.
I'll bet
about.
If he wanted to see any of us, he'd have to go around to the side door.
No, Georgie. From his mother, he doesn't seem a very tactful person, but...
He's just riffraff.
Oh, you mustn't say so.
She takes his hand.
And you must promise me never to use those bad words again.
I promise not to.
As he leaves, George peeks over his shoulder.
Unless I get mad at somebody.
Now an old man.
Wait till they send him away to school. Then he'll get it. They'll knock the stuffing out of him.
But George returned with the same stuffing.
In a carriage, he snaps a whip at a shopkeeper.
See here, pup, there's your mother know you're out. Turn down your pants, you would-be dude.
When Mr. George Amberson Minifer came home for the holidays in his sophomore year, nothing about him encouraged any hope that he had received his comeuppance. Cards were out for a ball in his honor, and this pageant of the tenantry was the last of the great long-remembered dances that everybody talked about.
Evening. Outside the Ambersons' mansion, a formally dressed couple braces against the wind, then steps through the front doors as butlers open them. In the spacious front hall, a chandelier twinkles in the breeze and guests mingle. An elderly man walks down a receiving line.
That big bow window. Folks, that's where we'll put the major when his time comes. Now, don't you look at me like that, Major. Georgie,
Sam.
You look fine. Ha, ha. There was a time, though, in your first month that you were so puny nobody thought you'd live. Where's Fanny?
Very well indeed.
Eugene steps up.
Isabel.
Eugene.
Their eyes linger.
This your boy, Isabel?
George, this is Mr. Morgan.
Remember you very well indeed.
George, you never saw me before in your life. But from now on, you're going to see a lot of me.
I hope.
I hope so too, Eugene.
Where's Wilbur?
You'll find him in the game room with some of the others. He never was much for parties, remember?
Yes, I remember. I'll come back for a dance.
Please do.
Eugene Morgan, Major Amberson.
Well.
Isabel and George turn back to the receiving line.
It'll be very well indeed.
Miss Morgan.
George stares, captivated.
Remember you very well indeed.
You don't remember her either, Georgie. But of course you will. Miss Morgan's from out of town. You might take her up to the dancing. I think you've pretty well done your duty here.
Be delighted.
20-ish George offers his arm to the young woman, and they stroll away.
What did you say your name was?
Morgan.
Oh, well, I'm certainly glad you're back.
It's nice to be back, too, Jack. It's been a long
Who's
time.
That?
Oh, I didn't catch his name when my mother presented him to me. You mean the queer-looking duck.
The who?
The queer-looking duck.
Oh, I wouldn't say that.
The one with him is my Uncle Jack. Honorable Jack Amberson. I thought everybody knew him.
He looks as though everybody ought to know him. Seems to run in your family.
Well, I suppose most everybody does know him. Out in this part of the country especially. Uncle Jack's pretty well known. He's a congressman, you know.
Oh, really?
Oh, yes. The family always like to have someone in Congress.
Upstairs, they pass a younger crowd.
Hello, Lucy.
Hello.
Hello, Lucy.
Hello, Argyle.
Hello, Lucy.
Hello.
How do these ducks get to know you so quick?
Oh, I've been here a week.
It seems to me you've been pretty busy. Most of these...
Hello, Lucy.
Hello.
Most of these ducks, I don't know what my mother would invite them here for anyway.
Don't you like them?
Oh, I used to be president of a club that we had here, and some of them belonged to it. But I don't care much for that sort of thing anymore. I really don't see why my mother invited them.
Maybe she didn't want to offend their fathers and mothers.
I hardly think that my mother need worry about offending anybody in this old town.
Must be wonderful, Mr. Amberson. Mr. Minifer, I mean.
What must be wonderful?
To be so important as that.
Oh, that is important. Good evening. Anybody that really is anybody ought to be able to do about as they like in their own town, I should think. Hello.
Eugene waves from the dance floor.
How's that for a bit of freshness?
What was?
That queer-looking duck waving his hand at me like that.
He met me.
Oh, he did. Everybody seems to mean you.
Sniffing her bouquet, she takes his arm.
See here. Are you engaged to anybody?
No.
Certainly seem to know a good many people.
Papa does. He used to live here in this town before I was born.
Where do you live now?
We've lived all over.
What do you keep moving around so for? Is he a promoter?
No, he's an inventor.
Oh? What's he invented?
Georgie.
Grandfather?
Just lately, he's been working on a new kind of horseless carriage.
Horseless carriage? Automobile? Well, well.
Don't you approve of them, Mr. Minifer?
Oh, yes.
They sit They're on a broad right. staircase.
You know, I'm just beginning to understand.
Understand what? What?
What it means to be a real Amberson in this town. Papa told me something about it before we came. But I see he didn't say half enough.
Did your father say he knew the family before he left here?
I don't think he meant to boast of it. He spoke of it quite calmly.
Most girls are usually pretty fresh. They ought to go to a man's college for about a year. And get taught a few things about freshness. Look here. Who sent you those flowers you keep making such a fuss over?
Lucy.
He did.
Who's he?
The queer-looking duck.
Come for that dance.
Oh, him. I suppose he's some old widower. Some old widower.
Yes, he is a widower. I ought to have told you before. He's my father.
Oh, well, that's a horse on me. If I'd known he was your...
This is our dance.
Eugene smiles at her.
Better guess at what it says, daughter.
George, dear, are you enjoying the party?
Yes, Mother, very much. Will you please excuse us? Miss Morgan?
Later, Isabel and Eugene near a punch bowl.
Ain't no anybody?
Not for me, sir.
I see you kept your promise, Gene. Isabel, I remember the last drink Gene ever had. Fact is, I believe if he hadn't broken that big fiddle, Isabel never would have taken Wilbur.
What do you think, Wilbur?
I shouldn't be surprised. If your notion's right, I'm glad Gene broke the fiddle.
What do you say about it, Isabel?
My jingle, he's blushing.
Who wouldn't blush?
The important thing is that Wilbur did get her, and not only got her, but kept her.
There's another important thing, that is for me. In fact, it's the only thing that makes me forgive that base vile for getting in my way.
His daughter strolls by.
What's that?
Lucy.
You having a good time?
I don't suppose you ever gave up smoking.
No, sir.
Well, I've got some Havanas.
Your ears burn, young lady? Would you care for some refreshments, Miss Morgan?
Yes, thanks.
Her father lingers nearby.
What did you say your name was?
Morgan.
Funny name.
Everybody else's name always is.
I didn't mean it was really funny. That's just one of the crowd's bits of horsing in college. I knew your last name was Morgan. I meant your first name.
Lucy.
George gapes.
Well.
Is Lucy a funny name, too?
No. Lucy's very much all right.
Thanks.
Here they are. Here they are, Henry.
Thanks for what?
Thanks about letting my name be Lucy.
In the ballroom, Eugene stands with Uncle Jack.
Goodbye. I've got this dance with her.
With whom?
With Isabel, of course.
18 years have passed, but have they? Tell me, have you danced with poor old Fanny, too, this evening?
Twice. Wilbur?
My gosh, old times certainly are starting all over again.
Not a bit. There aren't any old times, but times are gone. They aren't old, they're dead. There aren't any times, but new times.
As Wilbur and Uncle Jack smile, Eugene leads Isabel off in a dance. Her face, framed by upswept blonde hair, beams up at him. George and Lucy walk by.
What are you studying in school?
I beg your pardon?
What are you studying in school?
College.
College.
Oh, lots of useless guff.
Why don't you study some useful guff?
What do you mean, useful?
Something you'd use later in your business or profession.
I don't intend to go in any business or profession.
No?
No.
Why not?
Well, just look at them. That's a fine career for a man, isn't it? Lawyer. Bankers, politicians. What do they ever get out of life, I'd like to know? What do they know about real things? Where do they ever get?
What do you want to be?
A yachtsman.
Her eyes widen as he whisks her onto the dance floor. They disappear in the crowd. Eugene, tall and fair-haired, holds Isabel close as they sway and turn together, gazing into each other's eyes. Later, in the dimly lit front hall, Eugene wears an overcoat as he and Isabel dance alone. A few string musicians stand in the dark. George and Lucy come downstairs, smiling, and sit on the broad steps.
Of course they do. Horseless carriages. Automobiles.
Hmm?
People aren't going to spend their lives lying on their backs in the road letting grease drip in their faces. No, I think your father better forget about him.
Bob would be so grateful if he could have your advice.
I don't know that I've done anything to be insulted for.
You know, I don't mind you being such a lofty person at all. I think it's ever so interesting. But Papa's a great man.
Is he? Well, let us hope so. I hope so, I'm sure.
He turns his round, smiling face toward the dancing couple. Lucy stares at him fretfully, then watches her father.
How lovely your mother is.
I think she is.
She's the gracefulest woman. She dances like a girl of 16.
Most girls of 16 are pretty bad dancers.
They stand and walk toward the door.
I wouldn't dance with one of them unless I had to. The snow's fine for sleighing. I'll be by for you in the cutter 10 minutes after 2.
Tomorrow?
Thank you, Isabel.
I can't possibly go.
Bravo! Bravissimo!
Papa.
Lucy? I'll get your things.
Eugene strides off.
If you don't, I'm going to sit in a cutter at your front gate. And if you try to go out with anybody else, he has to whip me before he gets to you.
Hey, you two, I think you ought to take this in case you break down in that horseless carriage.
You better
Uncle
take
Jack,
your scarf, Lucy.
What is it?
Night, Isabel.
Come here.
Fanny, where...
The congressman walks over to George, who stares off at Lucy.
Well?
Put this scarf away.
Oh, nothing.
I will.
Here, hold this. Who is this fellow Morgan?
He's a man with a pretty daughter, Georgie.
Certainly seems to feel awfully at home here. The way he was dancing with Mother and Aunt Fanny.
Well, I'm afraid your Aunt Fanny's heart was stirred by ancient recollections, Georgie.
You mean she used to be silly about him?
Oh, she wasn't considered, singular. He was popular.
Oh.
Do you take the same passionate interest in the parents of every girl you dance with?
Oh, dry up. I only wanted to know. Lucy, about that sleigh ride.
I want to look at that automobile carriage of yours, Jean.
I'm coming. Fanny, you'll
catch
cold.
I'm going to ride that thing tomorrow. I want to see if it's safe.
Good night, Isabel.
Good night, Eugene.
You be ready 2:10.
No, I won't.
Yes, you will. 2:10.
In shadow, Lucy studies him.
Yes, I will.
Outside, her father hand cranks the engine of a motorized carriage.
I suppose you'll break down.
Come on, Lucy.
I'm coming, Papa. I hope you're going to be warm enough.
I got a blanket for you here, Gene. Bye.
Lucy and her father sit in an open seat, a fur across their laps as they motor off.
Papa!
Huh?
Papa, do you think George is terribly arrogant and domineering?
He's still only a boy. Plenty of fine stuff in him. Can't help but be. He's Isabel Amberson's son.
You liked her pretty well once, I guess, Papa.
Do still.
Inside, George with his mother.
Well, several things. I've been a little bothered about your father, too.
Why?
It seems to me he looks so badly.
He isn't any different than the way he's looked all his life that I can see.
He's been worried about some investments he made last year. I think the worries affected his health.
What investments? See here, he isn't going into Morgan's automobile concern, is he?
Oh, no. The automobile concern is all Eugene's. No, your father's rolling mills.
Wilbur steps into the hall.
Hello, dear. Have you had trouble sleeping?
Look here, Father. About this man Morgan and his old sewing machine. Doesn't he want to get Grandfather to put some money into it? Isn't that what he's up to?
You little silly. What on earth are you talking about? Eugene Morgan's perfectly able to finance his own inventions these days.
I'll bet he borrows money from Uncle Jack.
Georgie, why do you say such a thing?
He just strikes me as that sort of a man. Isn't he, Father?
He was a fairly wild young fellow 20 years ago. He's like you in one thing, Georgie. He spent too much money. Only he didn't have any mother to get money out of a grandfather for him. But I believe he's done fairly well of late years, and I doubt if he needs anybody else's money to back this horseless carriage.
Well, what's he brought the old thing here for, then?
I'm sure I don't know. You might ask him.
I'll be in to say goodnight, dear.
Isabel leaves her son in the dark hall with Aunt Fanny.
Aunt Fanny!
What in the world the matter with you?
I suppose you don't know why Father doesn't want to go on that horse's carriage trip tomorrow.
What do you mean?
You're his only sister, and yet you don't know.
He never wants to go anywhere that I ever heard of. What is the matter with you?
He doesn't want to go because he doesn't like this man Morgan.
Oh, good gracious. Eugene Morgan isn't in your father's thoughts at all, one way or the other.
Night.
Why should he be?
Good night.
Good night.
Hey, you two at it again. What makes you and everybody so excited over this man Morgan?
This man Morgan.
Excited?
Oh, shut up.
Jack returns to his room.
Can't people be glad to see an old friend without silly children like you having to make a to-do about it? I've just been suggesting to your mother that she might give a little dinner for them.
For who?
For whom, Georgie?
For whom, Georgie?
For Mr. Morgan and his daughter.
Oh, look here. Don't do that. Mother mustn't do that.
Mother mustn't do that.
Wouldn't look well.
Wouldn't look... See here, Georgie Minifer. I suggest that you just march straight on into your room. Sometimes you say things that show you have a pretty mean little mind.
What upsets you this much?
Shut up!
I know what you mean. You're trying to insinuate that I'd get your mother to invite Eugene Morgan here on my account.
I'm gonna move to a hotel.
Because he's a widower.
What?
What?
I'm trying to insinuate that you're setting your cap for him and getting Mother to help you?
Oh!
Is that what you mean?
George walks away from her closed door. Jack frowns at him.
You attend to your own affairs!
Well, I will be shot. I will. I certainly will be shot.
Oh!
Now a snowbanked stream reflects a passing horse and sleigh. Elsewhere, Eugene cranks the engine of his motorized carriage. Women wearing heavy coats shiver in the road. The nimble sleigh glides over the snow.
What's wrong with it, Gene?
I wish I knew.
Engine parts spin as Eugene cranks a handle. The open four-seater carriage bounces on its springs. The sleigh, pulled by a single horse, slides gracefully along a snow-packed road. Eugene lets go of the crank. Isabel and Aunt Fanny push the carriage as Eugene leaps into the driver's seat. Uncle Jack, shoving one spoked wheel, spills into the snow, then dusts himself off. The sleigh pulls up behind, holding George and Lucy.
Come on, Jack! Get a horse! Get a horse!
George and Lucy wave as they glide around a bend. Then the sleigh tips, and they roll down a snowy hill.
Look out, Lucy!
Eugene runs after them. At the bottom of the hill, the rolling couple, locked in an embrace and powdered with snow, comes to a stop. George stares down at Lucy. Then they kiss. Eugene smiles.
Are you all right?
Georgie!
They're all right, Isabel. The snowbank's a feather bed.
Georgie!
Eugene helps them up.
I'm fine, Papa.
Nothing the matter with Isabel.
Oh, Georgie.
They're all right, Isabel.
Are you sure you're not hurt, Lucy, dear?
Georgie!
Don't make a fuss, Mother.
George, that terrible fall.
Please, Mother, please. I'm all right.
Are you sure, Georgie? Sometimes one doesn't realize the shock.
Eugene leads Isabel across the snow to the horseless carriage. George catches up. Then Eugene takes Lucy's arm.
Oh, you look pretty fry, Lucy. All that snow becomes you.
That's right, it does.
The horse runs off with the sleigh.
Horse?
Oh, Aunt Dennis will be home long before we will. All we've got to depend on is Gene Morgan's broken down and chafing this guy.
Eugene watches Isabel brush snow off George.
Then stamp the snow off. You mustn't ride this way.
They're not wet. For goodness sakes, Gideon, you're standing in the snow yourself. Get in, Mother.
You're the same Isabel I used to know. You're a divinely ridiculous woman. George, you'll push if we get started, won't you?
George gapes.
Push?
Divinely and ridiculous just counterbalance each other, don't they? Plus one and minus one equal nothing. So you mean I'm nothing in particular?
No, that doesn't seem to be precisely what I meant.
Eugene cranks the engine. George rushes to the back of the carriage and pushes. Cloaked in exhaust, he coughs and stops pushing. Lucy and Uncle Jack look down on him.
Come on, Georgie, push!
I'm pushing.
Push harder!
Eugene frees the brake and the carriage rolls forward as George pushes. He takes a running jump onto the back. The carriage stops, spewing a cloud of exhaust. Jumping down, George grimaces against the fumes and tries to wave them away. Uncle Jack gets out to help push.
Come on, Georgie, push!
What do you think I'm doing?
He waves away exhaust with one hand and pushes with the other.
Your father wanted to prove that his horse's carriage would run even in the snow. It really does, too. It's so interesting. He says he's going to have wheels all made of rubber and blown up with air. I should think that explodes. Eugene seems very confident. Oh, it seems so like old times to hear him talk. Broke the bank and
next to Fanny, Lucy grins broadly as the carriage rolls forward. George and Jack climb on board.
George, you tried to swing underneath me and break the fall for me when you went over. I knew you were doing that. It was nice of you.
Wasn't much of a fall to speak of. How about that kiss?
Hear the sign, wish to die, and see him wink the other like the man who broke the bank at Monte Carlo.
Jack frowns at George.
I walked along the void below with an independent air. Hear the girls declare, see him in the air.
Teetering on its high spoked wheels, the automobile climbs up a sloping road. George hangs on the back. Now the shadow of a man approaches the Ambersons' front door, which is adorned with a black ribbon. The man slowly takes off his derby hat. The black butler somberly opens the door, and Eugene leads Lucy inside. In a viewing line, women wearing veils and men wearing dark overcoats file past, grim-faced. Behind the mourners, Eugene and Lucy stop and stare somberly, then cross the silent room to the Amberson family. Lucy joins George. Eugene pats his shoulder, then steps softly over to Isabel, who stands alone. As they walk off, arm in arm, Fanny follows after them, then stops. Fanny's wistful, teary gaze hardens, and her lip quivers. Outside, two stern-faced men stare.
Wilbur Minifer. Quiet man. Town will hardly know he's gone.
Later, lightning streaks the sky above the Amberson mansion. In a dark kitchen, George sits at a table crammed with dishes, eating ravenously. Fanny stands at the sink.
Where did Isabel go to?
She was tired.
It never was becoming to her to look pale. Look out.
Oh, boy. Strawberry shortcake.
It's first this season. Hope it's big enough.
You might know I'm coming home.
Mm.
What did you say?
Nothing.
Fanny sits and watches him eat.
Mm.
Sweet enough?
Fine.
Suppose your mother's been pretty gay at the commencement. Going a lot?
How could she in the morning? All she could do was sit around and look on. That's all Lucy could do either for that
matter. How did Lucy get home?
On the train with the rest of us.
Quit bowling your food.
George shovels in spoonfuls of strawberry shortcake. Fanny stares at him, her brow pinched in a frown.
Did you drive out to their house with her before you came here?
No. She went home with her father.
Oh, I see.
Don't eat so fast, George.
So, Eugene came to the station to meet you?
Meet us? How could he?
I don't know what you mean.
George scoops up more shortcake.
Want some more milk?
No, thanks.
I haven't seen him while your mother's been away.
Actually, he's beneath himself.
Did you see him?
Naturally, since he made the trip home with us.
He did? He was with you all the time?
Uh-uh. Only on the train in the last 3 days before we left. Uncle Jack got him to come along.
You're going to get fat.
I can't help that. You're such a wonderful housekeeper. You certainly know how to make things taste good.
Mm.
I don't think you'd stay single very long if some of these bachelors or widowers around town could just want...
Behind them, Uncle Jack saunters in.
What's odd?
Your mother's not mentioning that Mr. Morgan had been with you.
Didn't think of it, I suppose. But I'll tell you something in confidence.
What?
Well, it struck me that Mr. Morgan was looking pretty absent-minded most of the time. And he certainly is dressing better than he used to.
Oh, he... isn't dressing better, he's dressing up. Fanny, you ought to be a little encouraging when a prize bachelor begins to show by his haberdashery. What do you want you to think about him?
Jack tells me the fact he's been doing quite well.
Quite well?
Honestly, Aunt Fanny.
Why, listen, you changed
I shouldn't be a bit surprised to have him request an interview and declare that his intentions are honorable. And ask my permission to pay his addresses to you. What I better tell him?
Fanny chokes back tears.
Oh, Aunt Fanny.
Oh. Fanny, we were only teasing.
Oh, let me alone.
Please, Fanny.
We didn't mean anything.
Let go of me. Please.
We didn't know you got so sensitive as all this.
She runs out. Slowly, George turns to Uncle Jack, who stares at the floor.
It's getting so you can't joke with her about anything anymore. It all began when we found out Father's estate was all washed up and he didn't leave anything. I thought she'd feel better when we turned over his insurance to her. Gave it to her absolutely without any strings to it. But now...
Yeah. I think maybe we've been teasing her about the wrong things. Fanny hasn't got much in her life. You know, George, just being an aunt isn't... really the great career it may sometimes seem to be. really don't know of anything much Fanny has got. Except her feeling about Eugene.
Now Lucy, Fanny, Isabel, and George visit Eugene's automobile factory. They all jump back as sparks fly from a metalworker's hammer.
A car and a quarter a day. Isn't that marvelous? Yeah. What's marvelous? They're turning out a car and a quarter a day.
Oh!
Mother! Mother! Fanny! All this noise and smell seems to be good for you. I think you ought to come here every time you get the blues.
Oh, she never gets the blues, George. I never knew a person of a more even disposition.
Oh, it's this place.
I wish I could be more like that.
Wouldn't anybody be delighted to see an old friend take an idea out of the air like that? An idea most people laughed at him for. And turn it into such a splendid humming thing as this factory.
Remember this?
His steam carriage.
Our first machine. The original Morgan Invincible.
I remember.
How quaint. Of course I'm happy. So very, very happy.
Just look at the Morgan now, Mrs. Minifer.
It's beautiful. Just beautiful.
Did you ever see anything so lovely?
As what?
As your mother. She's a darling. And Papa looks as if he were going to either explode or utter loud sobs.
It's just glorious. It makes us all happy, Eugene. Give him your hand, Fanny. There. If Brother Jack were here, Eugene would have his three oldest and best friends congratulating him all at once. We know what Brother Jack thinks about it, though.
I used to write verse about 20 years ago. Remember that?
I remember that, too.
I'm almost thinking I could do it again. To thank you for making a factory visit into such a kind celebration.
Fanny frowns. Later, on the Ambersons' lawn, Eugene and Isabel sit beneath a spreading tree. He takes her hand.
Isabel, dear.
Yes, Eugene?
Don't you think you should tell George?
About us?
Yes.
There's still time.
I think he should hear it from you.
He will, dearest. Soon. Soon.
In town, an automobile rumbles by on its narrow rubber tires, trailing a cloud of smoke. A horse and carriage follows.
I'll still take a horse any day.
George pulls back on the reins. Next to him, Lucy frowns as the carriage slows.
Ooh.
Oh, don't.
Why? You want him to trot his legs off?
No, but...
No, but what?
I know when you make him walk, it's so he can give all your attention to proposing to me again. George, do that Pendennis trot again.
I won't.
Get up, Pendennis. Go on, trot. Come in.
Lucy, you are the prettiest thing in this world. When are you going to say we're really engaged?
Not for years. So there's the answer.
Lucy, dear, what's the matter? Look as if you're going to cry. You always do that whenever I can get you to talk about marrying me.
I know it.
Well, why do you?
One reason is because I have a feeling it's never going to be.
You haven't any reason,
it's
or...
It's just a feeling. I don't know. Everything's so unsettled.
You aren't the queerest girl. What's unsettled?
Well, for one thing, George, you haven't decided on anything to do yet. Or at least if you have, you've never spoken of it.
Lucy, haven't you perfectly well understood that I don't intend to go into a business or adopt a profession?
And what are you going to do, George?
Why, I expect to lead an honorable life. I expect to contribute my share to charities and to take part in, well, in movements.
What kind?
Whatever appeals to me. I should like to revert to the questions I was asking you, if you don't
no,
mind.
No, George, I think
your
we'd
father's
better...
a businessman.
He's a mechanical genius.
It's your father's idea. Both. Isn't it your father's idea that I have to go into a business and you oughtn't to be engaged to me until I do?
No. I've never once spoken to him about it.
But you know that's the way he does feel about it.
Yes.
Do you think that I'd be very much of a man if I let another man dictate to me my own way of life?
George, who's dictating your way of life?
I don't believe in the whole world scrubbing dishes, or selling potatoes, or trying law cases. No, I dare say I don't care any more for your father's ideals than he does for mine.
George!
Get up, Pendennis.
Now Uncle Jack and the Major ride in an enclosed carriage.
Seems to have recovered. Looks in the highest good spirits.
I beg pardon?
Your grandson.
Last night he seemed inclined to melancholy.
What about? Not getting remorseful about all the money he spent in college, is he? I wonder what he thinks I'm made of.
Gold. And he's right about that part of you, Father.
What part?
Your heart.
I suppose that may account for how heavy it feels nowadays sometimes. This town seems to be rolling right over that old heart you mentioned just now, Jack. Rolling over it and burying it under.
At dinner with George, Fanny, Jack, and Eugene, the Major and Isabel sit at either end of the table.
I miss my best girl.
We all do. Lucy's on a visit, Father. She's spending a week with a school friend.
She'll be back Monday.
George, how does it happen you didn't tell us before? He never said a word to us about Lucy's going away.
Probably afraid to. Didn't know what he might break down and cry if he tried to speak of it. Isn't that so, Georgie?
Or didn't Lucy tell you she was going?
She told me.
At any rate, Georgie didn't approve. I suppose you two aren't speaking again.
Gene, what's this I hear about someone else opening up a horseless carriage shop somewhere out in the suburbs?
I suppose they'll drive you out of business, or else the two of you'll get together and drive all the rest of us off of the street.
Well, we'll even things up by making the streets bigger. Automobiles will carry our streets clear out to the county line.
Well, I hope you're wrong, because if people go to moving that far, real estate values here in the old residence part of town will be stretched pretty thin.
So your devilish machines are going to ruin all your old friends, eh, Gene? Do you really think they're going to change the face of the land?
They're already doing it, Major, and it can't be stopped. Automobiles
are a useless nuisance.
Isabel glances down at her lap.
What did you say, George?
I said automobiles are a useless nuisance. Never amount to anything but a nuisance. They had no business to be invented.
Of course, you forget Mr. Morgan makes them. Also, did his share in inventing them. If you weren't so thoughtless, he might think you rather offensive.
I'm not sure George is wrong about automobiles. With all their speed forward, they may be a step backward in civilization. It may be that they won't add to the beauty of the world or the life of men's souls. I'm not sure. But automobiles have come. And almost all outward things are going to be different because of what they bring. They're going to alter war, and they're going to alter peace. And I think men's minds are going to be changed in subtle ways because of automobiles. And it may be that George is right. It may be that in 10 or 20 years from now, if we can see the inward change in men by that time, I shouldn't be able to defend the gasoline engine, but would have to agree with George that automobiles had no business to be invented.
George and Eugene lock eyes. Then the older man stands.
Well, Major, if you'll excuse me, Fanny.
Oh, Eugene.
Isabel, I've got to run down to the shop and speak to the foreman.
I'll see you to the door.
Don't bother, Sarah. I know the way.
I'll come, too.
Fanny walks out, and the Major follows. Eugene glances back at George, then leaves the room. Leaving George alone with his mother, Uncle Jack closes the door behind him. She studies George as he sits.
Georgie, dear, what did you mean?
Just what I said.
He was hurt.
Don't see why he should be. Didn't say anything about him. It seemed to me to be hurt. He seemed perfectly cheerful. What made you think he was hurt?
I know him.
Uncle Jack walks back in and leans against the dining room door, then strides over to the elaborate fireplace and takes out a cigar.
By Jove, Georgie, you are a puzzle.
In what way, may I ask?
Well, it's a new style, courting a pretty girl, I must say, for a young fellow to go deliberately out of his way to try and make an enemy of a father by attacking his business. By Jove, it's a new way of winning a woman.
Lips pursed in a defiant pout, George peeks at his mother, then throws down his napkin and leaves. Fanny finds him in the hall.
George, you struck just the right treatment to adopt. You're doing just the right thing.
Oh, what do you want?
Your father would thank you if he could see what you're doing.
Quit the mysterious detective business. You make me dizzy.
You don't care to hear that I approve of what you're doing?
If
For the gosh sakes, what in the world is wrong with you?
Oh, you're always picking on me, always, ever since you were a little boy.
Oh, my gosh.
You wouldn't treat anybody in the world like this except old Fanny. Old Fanny, you say. It's nobody but old Fanny, so I'll kick her. Nobody will resent it. I'll kick her all I want to. And you're right. I haven't got anything in the world since my brother died. Nobody, nothing.
Oh, my gosh.
I never, never in the world would have told you about it or even made the faintest reference to it if I hadn't seen that somebody else had told you or you found out for yourself in some way.
Somebody else had told me what?
How people are talking about your mother.
Halfway up the stairs, George glares at his aunt, his eyes narrowed.
What did you say?
Of course, I understood what you were doing when you started being rude to Eugene. I knew you'd give Lucy up in a minute if it came to a question of your mother's reputation.
Look here.
Because you said...
Look here. Just what do you mean?
I only wanted to say that I'm sorry for you, George. That's all. But it's only old Fanny, so whatever she says, pick on her for it. Hammer her. Hammer her.
Jack said...
It's only poor old lonely Fanny.
Look, Jack said that if there was any gossip, it was about you. He said people might be laughing about the way you ran after Morgan, but that was all.
Oh, yes, it's always Fanny. Ridiculous old Fanny. Always, always.
Listen... You said Mother let him come here just on your account. And now you say...
He did. Anyhow, he liked to dance with me. He danced with me as much as he did with her.
You told me Mother never saw him except when she was chaperoning you.
Well, you don't suppose that stops people from talking, do you? They just thought I didn't count. It's only Fanny Minifer, I suppose they'd say. Besides, everybody knew he'd been engaged to her.
What's that?
Everybody knows it. Everybody in this town knows that Isabel never really cared for any other man in her life.
I believe I'm going crazy. You mean you lied when you told me there wasn't any talk?
It never would have amounted to anything if Wilbur had lived.
You mean Morgan might have married you?
No. Because I don't know that I'd have accepted him.
Are you trying to tell me that because he comes here and they see her with him, driving and all that, they think that they were right in saying that she was in love with him before? Before my father died?
Why, George, don't you know that's what they say? You must know that everybody in town...
Who told you?
What?
Who told you there was talk? Where is this talk? Where does it come from? Who does it?
Well, I suppose pretty much everybody. I know it's pretty general.
Who said so?
What?
How did you get hold of it?
What?
You answer me!
Why, how do you think it would be fair to give names?
Look here. One of your best friends is that mother of Charlie Johnson's across the way. Has she ever mentioned this to you?
She may have intimated.
You and she have been talking about it. Do you deny it?
Why, George?
Do you deny it?
She's a very kind, discreet woman, George, but she may have intimated. George!
He races downstairs.
What are you going to do, George?
Later.
Mr. Amberson, I mean Mr. Minifer, won't you come in, please?
Thank you.
Well, how nice to see you, Mr. Minifer.
Mrs. Johnson?
He squarely faces the elderly matron.
Mrs. Johnson, I've come to ask you a few questions.
Certainly, Mr. Minifer, anything I can do for you.
I don't mean to waste any time, Mrs. Johnson. You were talking about a scandal that involved my mother's name.
Mr. Minifer?
My aunt told me you repeated this scandal to her.
I don't think your aunt can have said that. We may have discussed some few matters that have been a topic of comment about town.
Yes, I think you may have.
Other people may be less considerate.
Other people? That's what I want to know about. These other people. How many? How many?
What?
How many other people talk about it?
Really, this isn't a courtroom. And I'm not a defendant in a libel suit.
You may be. I want to know just who's dared to say these things if I have to force my way into every house in town. I mean to know just who told you these...
You mean to know? Well, you'll know something pretty quick. You'll know that you're out in the street. Please to leave my house.
George tenses and goes. Later, Uncle Jack sits in a bathtub as it fills.
Oh. Now you have done it.
What have I done that wasn't honorable and right?
Oh.
You think these riffraff can go around town bandying my mother's good name?
They can now. Georgie, gossip's never fatal to the denied.
If you think I'm going to let my mother's good name...
Good
be...
name? No, nobody has a good name and a bad mouth. Nobody has a good name and a silly mouth either.
Don't you understand me when I told you people are saying my mother means to marry
yes,
this man?
Yes, yes, I understood you.
Great God! You speak of it so calmly.
Why shouldn't they marry if they want
why
to?
Why shouldn't they?
Their own affair.
Why shouldn't they?
Yes, why shouldn't they?
Oh, that you can sit there and speak of it. Your own sister.
Oh, for heaven's sake, don't be so theatrical. Come back here.
George stalks out. Later, Eugene parks his convertible automobile at the curb in front of the Amberson mansion. As he climbs out and walks down the front path, George glares from an upstairs window. Downstairs, our view through an etched glass door shows George stepping in front of the housekeeper.
Keep in mind, Mary. I'll see who it is and what they want. Probably it's only a peddler.
Thank you, Mr. George.
George opens the inner door, then walks to the front doors where frosted glass shows the vague figure of Eugene. George opens the door.
Good afternoon, George. Your mother expects to go driving with me, I believe. If you'll be so kind as to send her word I'm here.
No.
I beg your pardon, I said...
I heard you. You said you had an engagement with my mother, and I said no.
What's the matter?
My mother will have no interest in knowing that you came here today. Or any other day.
I'm afraid I don't understand you.
I doubt if I can make it much plainer, but I'll try. You're not wanted in this house, Mr. Morgan. Now or at any other time. Perhaps you'll understand this.
George slams the door, then glares at the shadowy figure of Eugene through the frosted pane of glass. Eugene pauses, then leaves. Working his jaw, George turns with a determined glare and walks back through the foyer's inner door. Now, in a sitting room, Isabel wears a long velvet dress and a veiled hat. With a fur draped over her arm, she turns as a door closes, then rises and crosses to the front hall, where Uncle Jack removes his hat.
Isabel?
Yes?
I just come from Eugene.
Yes?
I want to talk to you.
He leads her across the tiled floor into the den, then closes the heavy double doors behind them. On the second floor landing, George leans over the banister.
Well?
George looks up at Fanny on the third floor landing.
I could just guess what that was about.
She pulls away from the banister and walks down as George descends the broad staircase to the dimly lit hall. On the second floor landing, Fanny grips the banister.
No, you don't, George Jennifer. You keep away from there.
You let go of
me. I won't come back here and let them alone.
All of you.
I shall. Go on to the top of the stairs. Go on.
She plants herself on a lower step. Slowly, George walks back up. Fanny follows, her fierce eyes fixed on George's back.
It's indecent. It's like squabbling outside the door of an operating room. The idea of you going in there now. Jack's telling Isabel the whole thing. Now you stay here and let him tell her. He's got some consideration for her.
I suppose you think I haven't.
You considerate of anybody?
I'm considerate of her goodness.
Oh.
Look here. Seems to me you're taking a pretty different tack.
I thought you already knew everything I did. I was just suffering, so I wanted to let out a little. Oh, I was a fool. Eugene never would have looked at me, even if he'd never seen Isabel. And they haven't done any harm. She made... We were happy. She was a true wife to him, as long as he lived. Here I go, not doing myself a bit of good by it. I'm just ruining them.
You told me how all the riffraff in town were busy with her name. And the minute I lift my hand to protect her, you attack me and...
Your uncle's leaving.
I'll be back, Isabel.
George, leave her alone. She's down there by herself. Don't go down.
With a tight-lipped pout, George returns to the landing. He glares down at his aunt, then turns upstairs. Now in a study, Eugene sits at a desk wearing a pinstriped suit and tie and writes a letter. He pauses, then rests his pen on a sculpted inkstand. Lifting the first page of his letter, he stares straight ahead, his forehead creased with worry. Beneath his thick mustache, his lips form a grim line as he turns his downcast eyes to his writing.
Dearest one, yesterday I thought the time had come when I could ask you to marry me, and you were dear enough to tell me sometime it might come to that. But now we're faced not with slander and not with our own fear of it, because we haven't any, but someone else's fear of it. Your sons. Oh, dearest woman in the world, I know what your son is to you, and it frightens me. Let me explain a little. I don't think he'll change. At 21 or 22, so many things appear solid and permanent and terrible, which 40 sees are nothing but disappearing miasma. 40 can't tell 20 about this. 20 can find out only by getting to be 40. And so we come to this, dear. Will you live your life your way or George's way? Dear, it breaks my heart for you. But what you have to oppose now is the history of your own selfless and perfect motherhood. Are you strong enough, Isabel? Can you make a fight?
In a dark room, Isabel looks up from the letter, her eyes rimmed with tears. Slowly, she stands and walks around the room, glancing down at the page.
I promise you that if you will take heart for it, you will find so quickly that it's all amounted to nothing. You shall have happiness, and only happiness. I'm saying too much for wisdom, I fear. But, oh, my dear, won't you be strong? Such a little, short strength it would need.
Isabel pauses and stares off.
Don't strike my life down twice, dear. This time I've not deserved it.
She glances up, her eyes glistening in the dim light. A brooch sparkles in the bow at her high collar. Now George comes out of his second floor room wearing pajamas and crosses the spacious hallway to his mother's door. Inside, Isabel sits primly in a chair, her fair hair wrapped in a braid around her head. George gently closes the door behind him, then stands, holding a letter.
Did you read it, dear?
Yes, I did.
All of it?
He puts it on her nightstand.
Yes.
As his mother stares intently, George slowly walks over to the bed, avoiding her gaze.
Well, what do you think, Georgie?
What do you mean?
You can see how fair he means to be.
Fair? Fair when he says that he and you don't care what people say?
What people say? That Eugene loves me?
He's always loved you.
Her hopeful smile fades, and she stands up, clasping her hands.
That's true, Georgie.
But you're my mother. You're an Amberson. You just...
Yes, dear?
George drops his stunned eyes and sinks onto the bed, his brow furrowed. He shakes his head slightly.
I don't know, Mother.
Isabel's shoulders sag as she lets out a choked breath, then crosses to the bed. Fretfully knitting her brow, she places her hands on George's head. As he rests against her, Isabel smooths his curls and stares off.
All right, Eugene. You'll understand. You'll wait. It'll be better this way.
Her shaking hand caresses her son's dark hair.
We'll go away for a while, you and I.
Daytime. George passes Lucy in town.
Hello.
George stops and takes off his hat. Lucy smiles up at him.
Lucy, you... Haven't you...
Haven't I what?
Nothing. May I walk with you a little ways?
Yes, indeed.
George puts on his hat and walks close by her side. He looks at the ground as Lucy beams contentedly.
I want to talk to you, Lucy.
Hope it's about something nice. Papa's been so glum today, he's scarcely spoken to me.
Well...
Is it a funny story?
It may seem like one to you. Just to begin with, when you went away, you didn't let me know. Not a word. Not even a line.
Why, no. I just trotted off for some visits.
At least you might have done
something. I know, George. Don't you remember? We'd had a quarrel. We didn't speak to each other all the way home from a long, long drive. And since we couldn't play together like good children, of course it was plain that we oughtn't to play at all.
Play?
What I mean is, we'd come to the point where it was time to quit playing. Well, what we were playing.
At being lovers, you mean, don't you?
Something like that. It was absurd.
It didn't have to be absurd.
No, it couldn't help but be. The way I am and the way you are wouldn't ever be anything else.
This time I'm going away. That's what I wanted to tell you, Lucy. I'm going away tomorrow night. Indefinitely.
I hope you have ever so nice a time, George.
I don't expect to have a particularly nice time.
Well, then, if I were you, I don't think I'd go.
This is our last walk together, Lucy.
Evidently, if you're going away tomorrow night.
This is the last time I'll see you. Ever. Ever in my life. Mother and I are starting on a trip around the world tomorrow. We've made no plans at all for coming back.
My, that does sound like a long trip. Do you plan to be traveling all the time, or will you stay in one place for the greater part of it? I think it'd be lovely.
Lucy.
To...
I can't stand this. I'm just about ready to go in that drugstore there and ask the clerk to give me something to keep me from dying in my tracks. It's quite a shock, Lucy.
What is?
To find out just how deeply you care. To see how much difference this makes to you.
George.
I can't stand this any longer. I can't, Lucy.
Bathed in sunlight, she grins. George takes off his hat.
Goodbye, Lucy.
Her eyelashes flutter as she continues to grin.
It's goodbye.
George turns and walks away. Then stops and looks back at her smiling face, his brow pinched.
I think it's goodbye for good, Lucy.
Goodbye, George. I do hope you have the most splendid trip.
He stalks off, and she waves.
Give my love to your mother.
As she stands alone on the sidewalk, Lucy's smile fades, and she glances down. Slack-jawed, she turns and goes into the apothecary.
May I please have a few drops of aromatic spirits of ammonia and a glass of water?
He nods and takes a bottle from a shelf lined with tonics. As he turns back, his eyes whiten.
For gosh sake, miss.
Later, Uncle Jack holds out his hand and helps Lucy down from a carriage.
It's mighty nice of you, Lucy. You and Eugene to have me over to your new house my first day back.
You'll probably find the old town rather dull after Paris.
Later, they sit in a spacious drawing room with Eugene.
I found Isabel as well as usual. Only I'm afraid as usual isn't particularly well. Struck me Isabel ought to be in a wheelchair.
What do you mean by that?
Oh, she's cheerful enough, at least... She manages to seem so. She's pretty short of breath. Father's been that way for years, of course, but never nearly so much as Isabel is now. I told her I thought she ought to make Georgie let her come home.
Let her? Does she want to?
She doesn't urge it. George seems to like the life there in his grand, gloomy, and peculiar way. She'll never change about being proud of him and all that. It's quite a swell. She does want to come. She'd like to be with Father, of course, and I think she's... Well, she intimated one day that she was afraid it might even happen... She wouldn't get to see him again. I think she was really thinking of her own state of health.
I see. And you say he won't let her come home?
I don't think he uses force. He's very gentle with her. Doubt if the subject is mentioned between them, yet... Knowing my interesting nephew as you do, Wouldn't you think that was about the way to put it?
Knowing him as I do, yes.
Now at a train station, Jack opens the door to an enclosed carriage as George carries his mother over and puts her inside. Fanny climbs in after them. The driver gently nudges the team of horses. As the carriage moves slowly through town, Isabel leans her head against George.
Changed. So changed.
You mean the town? You mean the old place has changed, don't you, dear?
Yes.
It'll change to a happier place, old dear, now that you're back at it. I'm going to get well again.
In the Ambersons' front hall, the butler approaches Eugene.
Mr. Jones will be right down, Mr. Morgan.
Thank you.
As the butler strides off, Eugene stands alone in his overcoat, holding his hat. Light shines softly through the etched glass of the foyer door. Eugene looks up. Taking slow, deliberate steps, he crosses the hall and stands face to face with George at the bottom of the broad staircase.
I've come to see your mother, George.
I'm sorry, Mr. Morgan.
Eugene fixes him with a glare. Fanny comes downstairs.
Not this time, George. I'm going up to see her.
The doctor said that she had to be kept quiet.
I'll be quiet.
Eugene pauses on the steps as Fanny clutches a hanky to her mouth.
I don't think you should right now. The doctor said...
Fanny's right, Jean.
Uncle Jack stands on the landing above them.
Why don't you come back later?
Eugene stares up at him, then slowly turns away. His heavy-lidded gaze settles on Fanny and softens. George aloofly steps between his aunt and Eugene on his way upstairs. Shaking with sobs, Fanny watches Eugene walk away, fingering his hat.
All right.
At an upstairs window, George pulls aside the curtains. As he watches Eugene walk to his car, the window reflects George's somber face.
She wants to see you.
George turns and walks through the darkness of the second floor hall to a nurse who stands at his mother's door. Followed by the nurse, George opens the bedroom door and enters a room veiled in shadows. He kneels by the canopy bed, where his mother lies, her blonde hair spilling across the pillows. Her cheeks and lips are pale. Dark circles ring her closed eyes.
Darling, did you get something to eat?
Yes, Mother.
All you needed?
Yes, Mother.
Are you sure you didn't catch cold coming home?
I'm all right, Mother.
He kisses her hand.
That's sweet. Sweet.
What is, Mother, darling?
My hand against your cheek. I can feel it.
A fleeting smile nudges his lips. Slowly, Isabel opens her eyes.
I wonder if Eugene and Lucy know that we've come home.
I'm sure they do.
Isabel looks into his eyes.
Has he asked about me?
George lowers her hand and swallows.
Yes. He was here.
Has he gone?
Yes, Mother.
Oh. I'd like to have seen him. Just once.
She stares off, taking labored breaths.
She must rest now.
A drawn curtain casts dark shadows across their faces. George stands, turning away from his mother, whose plaintive eyes follow him. Now in his bed, Major Amberson rests, wearing a suit and tie. He swallows and turns fitfully. Licking his lips, he frowns, then opens his eyes and rises as George passes through the room. At the door, Aunt Fanny grips George in an embrace as the major walks down the hall.
George, she loved you. She loved you.
Later, the major sits alone.
And now, Major Amberson was engaged in the profoundest thinking of his life. And he realized that everything which had worried him or delighted him during this lifetime, all his buying and building and trading and banking, that it was all trifling and waste beside what concerned him now. For the major knew now that he had to plan how to enter an unknown country where he was not even sure of being recognized as an Amberson.
Father?
The major looks up.
Father?
The
house was in Isabel's name, wasn't it?
Yes.
Can you remember when you gave her the deed, Father?
No. No, I can't just remember.
It doesn't matter.
The whole estate's about as mixed up as an estate can get. You ought to have that deed, George.
No, don't bother.
The major blinks in the flickering light from a fireplace and licks his lips.
It must be in the sun. There wasn't anything here. The sun in the first place. The sun. Earth came out of the sun. We came out of the earth. So, whatever we are, we must have been there.
Our view of the major's weathered face fades to black. Now at the train station, Uncle Jack faces George.
Odd way for us to be saying goodbye. One wouldn't have thought it even a few years ago. But here we are. Two gentlemen of elegant appearance in a state of bustitude. You can't ever tell what'll happen at all, can you? Once I stood where we were standing now to say goodbye to a pretty girl. Only it was in the old station before this was built. We called it the depot. We knew we wouldn't see each other again for almost a year. I thought I couldn't live through it. She stood there crying. Don't even know where she lives now. Or if she is living. If she ever thinks of me, she probably imagines I'm still dancing in the ballroom of the Amberson Mansion. She probably thinks of the mansion as still beautiful. Still the finest house in town. Ah, life and money both behave like loose quicksilver in a nest of cracks. When they're gone, you can't tell where or what the devil you did with them. But I believe I'll say now, while there isn't much time left for either of us to get any more embarrassed, I believe I'll say I've always been fond of you, Georgie. I can't say I've always liked you. But we all spoiled you terribly when you were a boy. But you've had a pretty heavy jolt. You've taken it pretty quiet. Well, with the train coming into the shed, you'll forgive me for saying there have been times I thought you ought to be hanged. And just for a last word, there may be somebody else in this town who's always felt about you like that. Fond of you, I mean. No matter how much it seems you ought to be hanged, you might try. Well, I must run. I'll send back the money as fast as they pay me, so goodbye, and God bless you, Georgie.
Jack trots off. Now Eugene and Lucy stroll outside.
Did you ever hear the Indian name for that little grove of beech trees?
No. You never did either. Well?
The name was Loma Nasha. It means they couldn't help it.
Doesn't sound like it.
Indian names don't. It was a bad Indian chief lived there. The worst Indian that ever lived. And his name was... It was... Vendona. Means rides down everything.
What?
His name was Vendona. Same thing as rides down everything.
I see. Go on.
Vendona was unspeakable. He was so proud he wore iron shoes and walked over people's faces with them. So at last the tribe decided that it wasn't a good enough excuse for him, that he was young and inexperienced. he'd have to go. So they took him down to the river and put him in a canoe, pushed him out from shore. And the current carried him on down to the ocean. And he never got back. They didn't want him back, of course. They hated Vendôme. But they weren't able to discover any other warrior they wanted to make chief in his place. They couldn't help feeling that way.
I see. So that's why they named the place They Couldn't Help It.
Must have been.
He smiles down at his daughter. As they walk on, their smiles slowly fade.
So, you're going to stay in your garden. You think it's better just to keep walking about among your flower beds till you get old? Like a pensive garden lady in a Victorian engraving?
I suppose I'm like that tribe that lived here, Papa. I had too much unpleasant excitement. I don't want any more. In fact, I don't want anything but you.
You don't? What was the name of that grove?
They couldn't have...
The Indian name, I mean.
Oh. Mola Ha Ha.
Mola Ha Ha. That wasn't the name you said.
Oh, I've forgotten.
See, you have. Perhaps you remember the chief's name better.
I don't.
Eugene wraps an arm around her and draws her close.
I hope someday you can forget it.
Now George faces Fanny.
Please try and understand. It's not doing either of us any good going on arguing this way. That place you picked up...
This boarding house is practical. And we could be together.
How? On $8 a week, I'm only going to be getting $8 a week at the law office. You'd be paying more of the expenses than I would.
I'd be paying.
Certainly you would. We'd be using more of your money than mine.
My money. I've got $28. That's all.
$28?
That's all. I know I told Jack I didn't put everything in the headlight company, but I did. Every cent. And it's gone.
Why did you wait till now to tell me?
I couldn't tell till I had to. It wouldn't do any good.
Oh, my gosh.
Oh, I know what you're gonna do. You're going to leave me in the lurch.
I'm only asking you to be reasonable. To try and understand that it's impossible for either of us to go on this way. Will you get up?
I can't.
She slumps on the floor.
I'm too weak.
Oh, none of this makes any sense. Will you get up?
I knew your mother'd want me to watch over you. And try to make something like a home for you. And I tried. I tried to make things as nice for you as I could.
I know that.
I walked my heels down looking for a place for us to live. I walked and walked over this town. I didn't run one block on a streetcar. I wouldn't use 5 cents no matter how tired.
For the gosh sakes, will you get up? Don't sit there with your back against the boiler. Get up, Aunt Fanny.
It's not hot. It's cold. The plumber's disconnected. I wouldn't mind if they hadn't. I wouldn't mind if it burned me, George.
He drags her up.
For gosh sakes, get up. Now stop it. Stop it. Listen to me. Do you hear me? Listen to me now.
There. That's better. Now let's see where we stand. See if we can afford this place you picked out.
I'm sure the boarding house is practical, George. I'm sure it's practical.
I know it must be practical.
It is a comfort to be among nice people.
It's all right. I was thinking of the money, Aunt Fanny.
There's one great economy. They don't allow tipping. They have signs that prohibit it.
That's good. But the rent's $36 a month. And dinner $22.50 for each of us. I've got about $100 left. $100, that's all. I won't need any new clothes for a year. Perhaps
it will... longer. So you see...
Yes, I see. I see that 36 and 45 make 81. At the lowest, we'll need $100 a month. And I'm going to be making 32.
Later, at an office.
A real flare! Real flare for the law! That's right. Couldn't wait till tomorrow to begin. The law's a jealous mistress and a stern mistress.
I can't do it. I can't take up the law.
What?
I've come to tell you that I've got to find something quicker. Something that pays from the start.
I can't think of anything just this minute that pays from the start.
Well, sir, I've heard that they pay very high wages to people in dangerous trades. People that handle touchy chemicals or high explosives. Men in the dynamite factories. I thought I'd see if I couldn't get a job like that. I wanted to get started tomorrow if I could.
Georgie, your grandfather and I were boys together. Don't you think I ought to know what's the trouble?
Well, sir, it's Aunt Fanny. She set her mind on this particular boarding house. And it seems she put everything in the headlight company. Well, she got some old cronies, and I guess she's been looking forward to the games of bridge and the harmless kind of gossip that goes on in such places. Really, it's a life she'd like better than anything else. It struck me that she just about got to have it.
I got her in that headlight business, but Jack, I feel a certain responsibility myself.
I'm taking the responsibility. She's not your aunt, you know,
well,
sir.
Well, I'm unable to see, even if she's yours, that a young man is morally called upon to give up a career at the law to provide his aunt with a favorable opportunity to play bridge whist. All right, all right. If you'll promise not to get blown up, I'll see if he can find you the job. You certainly are the most practical young man I ever met.
George Amberson Minifer walked homeward slowly through what seemed to be the strange streets of a strange city. For the town was growing and changing. It was heaving up in the middle incredibly. It was spreading incredibly. And as it heaved and spread, it befouled itself and darkened its sky. This was the last walk home he was ever to take up National Avenue to Amberson Addition and the big old house at the foot of Amberson Boulevard. Tomorrow they were to move out. Tomorrow everything would be gone.
In a dark room, George kneels, resting his folded hands on a brass bed stripped of its sheets.
Something had happened. A thing which, years ago, had been the eagerest hope of many, many good citizens of the town. And now it came at last. George Amberson Minifer had got his comeuppance. He got it three times filled and running over. But those who had so longed for it were not there to see it. And they never knew it. Those who were still living had forgotten all about it and all about him.
Now at an automobile accident.
All right, stay back there now.
He run into me as much as I run into him. And if he gets well, he ain't going to get not one single cent out of me. I'm perfectly willing to say I'm sorry for him, and so's the lady with me.
Wonderful, the damage. What are these little machines can do? You never believe it. All right, Sonny, back in your car. Back in your car. All right, stay back there now.
A newspaper headline reads, Auto Casualties Mount. A cartoon below shows a skeleton at the wheel of a convertible. Another story reports, serious accident. G.A. Minifer, both legs broken. In his study, Eugene lowers the paper. Lucy stands at his side.
What are you going to do, Papa?
Eugene folds his hands and rests them on the newspaper. Lucy turns away, then pauses.
I'm going to him. coming, Papa?
She leans in toward her father, who stares at his hands. Lucy steps away, then walks briskly across the room with a determined gaze. At his desk, Eugene clenches his hands and darts his eyes around. He looks toward the door and stands, then takes a few awkward steps. Breaking into a smile, he strides out after his daughter. Later, he steps out of a hospital room and meets Fanny in the hallway.
How is he? How is Georgie?
He's going to be all right. Fanny, I wish you could have seen George's face when he saw Lucy. You know what he said to me when we went into that room? He said, "You must have known my mother wanted you to come here today so that I could ask you to forgive me." We shook hands.
Fanny smiles up at Eugene as they walk together down the hall.
I never noticed before how much like Isabel Georgie looks.
He stops.
You know something, Fanny? I wouldn't tell this to anybody but you.
As they slowly continue walking, tears streak Fanny's cheek, and she glances upward.
But it seemed to me as if someone else was in that room. And through me, she brought her boy under shelter again. And that I'd been true at last to my true love.
Holding Fanny's arm, he walks on. Fanny breaks into a smile. Now the cover of a large book reads, "The Magnificent Ambersons."